Hey, Cleveland Moto Podcast number 462.
Light them up, boys.
Version.
Hey, I'm drinking Shell's Deer Brand, and to my left is
Dan Kropke,
the guy who brought it.
Straight from Minnesota.
Cool. Yeah, it is straight from Minnesota. And to his left,
Steve Sleepy.
And to his left,
Johnny McAttack.
Johnny McAttack. And to his left,
Pete Emfling,
wearing a Sub Pop shirt. Bad fucking ass right there. Yeah. And to his left,
Chris Smith.
And behind the bar tonight,
Tom Pennington.
So crazy today. It got sunshiny today.
In Cleveland.
Fourth winter is officially over. I'm calling it. That's it. This is it. From now on.
I took the snow tires off my car today and put the summer tires on.
Oh, we're screwed.
There's going to be 2 feet of snow tomorrow, right?
Yeah. That's going to be the kiss of death. Yeah,
you better go out and fire up your snowblower. Just make sure it's ready to go.
I put that in the shed, too.
Just to be sure.
I know.
Oh, man. We haven't taken the snow tires off Merritt's car yet. We're teetering. But today was the day you would swear to God the city of Cleveland, everybody who owns a motorcycle, got like a telegram or a bat signal, take your bikes out now.
About 8:30, 9 o'clock, you felt a little rumble going
on.
Like, are we having that one of those earthquake things? No, it's just a bunch of bikes starting up.
Bunch of bikes. And on a Saturday, so everybody's, you know, most people are off work.
Oh, you can smell the lacquer, the varnish.
Yes, you're good. The whole city had old gas haze, right? Yeah. They all fired them at the same time. I had to take Merritt to the airport. She'd gone to San Diego for our artificial intelligence conference out there for educators. So I had to be up at 0400 and out the house by 4:30, got her to the airport at 0500. Back to the shop. I haven't been at my shop at 5:10 in the morning since I slept there from drinking too much. And it was weird. So I just immediately head down. I know I got a bunch of people that want to pick their bikes up, right? And so I was head down and I got about 4 or 5 bikes prepped before I even called Renee and said, hey, you want to go for breakfast? Because it's going to be a very, very long day. And so she said, yeah, I'm getting in the shower right now. I can meet you for breakfast. Where do you want to meet? I said, well, fucking Jeans, because it's right next to the gas station. So I can be prepping bikes and not even worry about what time you're going to get to Jeans. Because I'm just going to, at one point, you're going to text me and be like, I'm sitting at a table and I will slide in and we're going to have the world's fastest breakfast.
I can verify that because I was going to interview Brian.
Yeah.
And so I got off the highway and went to the Dunkin' Donuts in front of your shop.
Oh, really?
At 9:30.
Oh, all the bikes are out.
And I was like, why has Phil got all these bikes outside? I'm like,
it's true.
That's kind of weird.
It is.
And I'm like, the shop looks closed. I didn't see Tom's. I'm like, Tom's not working. Your car wasn't there. And I'm like,
No, we had the whole shop pre-staged. Yeah. All the bikes were outside with the columns locked. On one of my gas runs, I stopped and Renee and I threw lunch or breakfast down our throat in the fastest way possible. Got back to the shop, and it never slowed down.
Nope.
It was just fucking, just nonstop. And great, good news, we sold some bikes. That was cool. We got a really decent number of bikes that Tom had serviced. We got them picked up and gone, which is very nice. We need the space as much as we possibly can because our distributors keep sending us bikes. But was very funny, the number of, like, while Chris was there, while you picked up a couple of bikes today. And while he was there, people just kept bombing in. So it was like, you know, nobody's got an appointment. Everybody's just like,
motorcycle.
And I'm like, are you here to pick up your bike? And they're like, no, I'm here to buy a bike. And you're like, okay. Fucking even like better, man. That's cool. And in the middle of today's chaos,
let's turn that into you're picking up a bike.
Right. Yeah, let's do that. How quickly can you prep this? You'd be shocked at how quickly I could prep this. In the middle of all the chaos, our man, Kurt Cousineau, decided at noon, that he wanted to trade in his Stella for a buddy. Now, he just picked up a real Vespa GTS 300 Super Sport. Just picked that up the other day. Well, I think once he rode an 85-mile-an-hour Vespa, he was like, I don't need a Stella anymore. Mm-hmm. So he traded the Stella in. And I hot prepped him a Buddy 125 in Kermit the Frog Green. And I was still hot prepping it, trying to deal with customers. Every time I'd walk past his bike, I would do a thing to it. And then I'd keep dealing with the customer. And he was great. He was patient and the whole deal. And he...
The Stella got a little stale.
Oh, yeah. The Stella was a Stella. And this is a Stella that many, many years ago, we took the OEM 150 motor out of, and we put a 200cc motor in, and reinforced the transmission, changed the clutch and everything, so it would just live its life pulling a sidecar around. Because his son was fucking super tripped out about the sidecar, just loved the sidecar. So that thing lived a good life pulling a sidecar for about 9,000 miles, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And so he sold the sidecar a couple of years ago and was just running the bikes the way it is. Now, for our podcast listeners at home.
Liberated.
Yeah, all of a sudden the bike got a 120-pound weight loss program. Well, when you gear a bike for sidecars, you're gearing it super low, right? You're gearing it really, really low. And it's a hot motor to begin with, but then geared real low, it runs out of gear at about 50 miles an hour. Yeah. But it does not run out of revs. And this thing is very spicy. First and second gears. It becomes an exercise in like... Two strokes, when you allow them to sing, the front wheel gets real fucking light. Yeah. And this thing, first gear and second gear, is real fucking light. So I had just sold...
Even my P125, it had a kit on it. I think it was a Melosi one. Not a Melosi.
But we had a 166 kit
Bellini,
on that one.
Bellini 166. Yeah. And first gear, wheelie, no problem. Second gear, sometimes...
Yeah, they two strokes are happy bikes, right? And what I just thought was funny was... I'm trying to get all this shit done. I didn't even have a chance to test ride his bike or do anything like that because he's my friend. I'm just like, I know the bike. It's going to be fine. Well, I eventually got the buddy out, and I got all these people coming in, and, you know, some of them, you know, they want to fucking waste my time because it's a sunny day, and other people. But I think if you walked into my shop today and you had a half a brain, you'd realize this was not the day to ask dumb questions and tell me stories because I was just no time for that shit. Kurt got his bike. We finally changed the plates on it. And I'm like, cool. I didn't even know his father's in the hospital right now on his deathbed. And the family's all at the hospital. The motorcycle priority is very strange. Like, he's like, I've been dealing with my dad dying for the past week. I just needed to get the fuck out of there. And I was like, I had no idea. I would have dropped everything. And just, he goes, no, man, it was just cool being here and being part of that whole thing. And it was what he needed. He needed to get away. And, you know, his household is now, he's got a buddy 125 for his wife to dick around with and his kid to dick around with. And then he's got the GTS. He's a happy dude. So really fun seeing a bunch of people smiling today, just ear to ear, just freaking, just super happy. You just know like
I,
great.
I noticed today, because there's definitely a lot of bikes out everywhere, but out by me in BFE, there's pretty much one style of bike riding around.
Oh yeah, right. And yeah, for real,
you would not believe
that's your style now.
That's right. My brother. But the amount of effort, the neck gaiter to the face gaiter to the like leather bound goggles, but no helmet. Like they will. No, there's like four or five different accoutrements that they're putting on down just to avoid wearing a helmet.
Right. Because like, a helmet was one move.
Yeah.
A helmet's one
You're
move.
You're accomplishing
all
that, and it even protects your head.
Yeah.
And nope. They got like multiple layers of like, you know, wind deflecting cloth on their nose and all this stuff. I'm like, Jesus.
Don't want to have a lid, though.
No lid.
Even Cleveland attorney Tim Misney on the billboards wearing a full face helmet. Right? Motorcycle? I'll make him pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. He needs to send me a check for that right there.
Yeah.
So, Phil, tell him about the VTX guy that came in.
Well, somebody left today without a smile.
Uh-oh.
This was the VTX that got fixed? The one you were selling? Or
nope.
Okay.
Oh, no, good. That VT 1100 Shadow, that's gone. Guy's super happy. Never been happier. But this guy rolled up. VTX painted with vinyl, just adhesive, right? Just laid a weird thing on it.
I wrapped it.
It's a 2002, I think. Yeah, 2002 VTX 1300. Had a hard life, very hard life. And this guy shows up and he's got his cut on. So he's got this leather cut with a bunch of, you know, fun patches and stuff on it.
He had just bought it. He told me 3 weeks ago.
That's the story, is that this bike is like, and if I would have said, here's $500, go buy the worst VTX 1300 you could buy, this would have been the bike. This would have been the one. And he's like, well, I'm trying to get it worked on because it's got the head gaskets are leaking pretty bad. And he knew enough. He talked to enough people that refused him service to know that his head gaskets were pretty bad. Mm. He didn't get that on his own.
Right.
Other mechanics have told him that. And other mechanics had also told him to come to our shop. And I'm going to find those guys someday. This tyranny shall not stand. But it brings up an interesting point, because that motorcycle is 23 years old, 22 years old. And I can promise you, anybody out there in podcast land who thinks that I'm a dick for refusing him, come and work here for 2 weeks. Because if you think you're God's gift to motorcycling, and you think you're God's gift to motorcycle mechanics, unless you have a fucking time machine and a system of pneumatic tubes that go from Japan in 2023 or 2002 to now, you are not going to find the parts you need to fix that bike. You're damn sure not going to find them in less than 2 months. That bike, wherever it goes, whoever agrees to work on it, is going to be tripping over it for the next minimum 3-4 months. And this is not, you know, the Ides of April are upon us, tax day's damn near here. This is not the time you want to take a big, heavy, extra stabby bike, because this bike had all the stabby parts added to it, right? You don't want to be skinning your ankles on this thing for the next 3 or 4 months in your shop while it's taking up your favorite lift, right? And I tried to tell it to him in the nicest way possible without just giving him the whole, yeah. We had a dealer meeting this week in Cancun, and many things were shared. One of the first things that I can share is that our friend who's been doing this longer than I have says, very simply put, any motorcycle that is over 14 years old, we use the term, well, we don't deal with obsolete motorcycles. And if you look up obsolete in the dictionary, it's kind of accurate. They're no longer supportable. They're no longer supported. Parts are no longer available for them. Now, if you grew up when I did, the Yugo became obsolete about 2 years after it was sold to the customers here in the United States.
Right.
If you had a 1980 Alfa Romeo, it became obsolete in about 1984, 1985. You couldn't get parts to keep that car on the road. I have friends that had Saabs that were obsolete 5 or 6 years after they bought them because parts support dried up. Honda's an amazing company. There's nothing wrong with what Honda does. Honda used to be the company that would keep the parts around the longest. So I could go into my Honda dealer and get parts for a 1977 CB750, even in the 90s. That's amazing. But Honda's tightened up on that. They don't play that game anymore.
And they had that one website. It was Honda Parts Online or something, which was actually OEM Honda Parts. Like, it was dedicated, and you could sometimes get that. But it was all pretty expensive and stuff. It
wasn't you were really paying for that.
You
know. Yeah. That company who bought up stocks and stocks and stocks of Honda dealers' parts, well, they were going to make you pay for the ones they weren't selling. So very, very interesting. And the first of many.
You can buy anything you want from Amazon, and it'll all be perfect, and it'll work
great for you. Oh, yeah. You never have a problem.
They'll never be, you know.
Never be a problem. Just what we went through with a Bergman 400.
Yep.
Which is a bike that, up until a couple of years ago, you could still buy a Bergman 400 in 2020 from the dealership, and we couldn't get parts for a 2007 Honda Bergman or Suzuki Bergman.
But no real change in the bike in all those years.
There were several.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there were several. Motorcycles, even a motorcycle you think is standardized, what you might find out is there might be 6 or 7 different suppliers that change. And you might think, oh, I've got a Moto Guzzi V7, so it's going to be all the same things. Well, we found out the hard way when Moto Guzzi or Aprilia had a problem with their valve train, that some parts of the valve train were manufactured by this manufacturer over there, and they were fine. But the other 3/4 of the bikes were not, and they all had problems. And so we learned there's like 5 different versions of a particular motor that you can have, and you don't know what version you have until you get the fucking heads off. That's a bad time or a long way to walk to find out what version of a motor you have so you can order the right parts to fix it. Because at that point, that thing is living rent-free on your lift.
I think there's a proclivity to order parts like, you know what, my motor needs a rebuild. I'd like to order all the parts, tear the motor down and rebuild, but you really should never do that.
That's right.
You kind of need to tear the motor apart,
yeah.
See what you got.
Yeah.
Because you might find that, oh, this motor needs another motor, what I mean? And do some measurements and make sure what you're buying is the correct for that motor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it is no longer the saying. I can just think of off my top of my head that in certain motorcycle engines, you can have version 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that would mean, even with a company as primitive as Royal Enfield, they told us, look for these marks. Look for these marks, and that will tell you which transmission you have.
And there's like things...
You can't pre-buy it.
Simple little things like, if you have version 2 motor... Where they were like, oh, it needs more oil up at the top. And so they have a different oil journal on the side. And then you get a version 1 gasket that blocks that hole now. You're fucked. Like, that means it's something as simple as that can totally hose you. Just a gasket.
There's a reason, too, why there's a CB750 K1, K2, K3, K4, K5. Yep. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because each one of those had some sort of
some changes happening, even in the 70s, right? Absolutely. Way back then. And so one of our friends just got a job working at Rock and Roll Harley-Davidson. So, and he's a salesperson there. And today I got the very first call. Hey, a buddy, this guy gave me your phone number. Okay, cool. Tell me more. I was over. I took my Harley over to Rock and Roll Harley-Davidson, and they wouldn't work on it. But one of the salesmen there gave me your number. And I said, okay, thanks, Mikey. here we go. Caused the power outage of 2003. That's Mike. So I said, well, what does your bike need? Tell me a little bit about your bike. First of all, what year and model is it? It's a 2002 Ultra. Oh, fuck. Well, at least it's fat, slow, and heavy, or at least fat and heavy. Is it running? It's running. What kind of work did you need to have done to it? Well, oh, crap. Here we go. He gave me a list that went from...
It needs a tune-up.
I have leaky seals.
Yep.
Pushrod seals. I have leaky pushrod seals. He went in a very short order all the way to the latches that were broken on his tour pack. And I'm like, man, you...
We can do the latches.
You are going to make some Harley dealer so happy. And then I thought, no, he's not, because his bike is 22 years old.
Yep.
And they told him to go fuck his hat.
Yep.
And that's why Mikey said to call me.
Go fuck your Harley Davidson branded hat.
Your V-twin chapeau. And I said, there's only one place I know you can call. And I gave him the number for Santa's. Now, Santa's here in Cleveland is a shop that's been around forever. They are tiny. They're a house. They're a little tiny house on West 140th Street with about a 3-car garage next to it.
It's both weird and cool at the same time.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. And she runs a tight ship over there, but she will... work on anything she sees that she can make money on. And occasionally the place burns down, but it's okay. They recover. But they, I said, please call Santa's, because it's everything that you need. If this was November,
yeah,
I would do it. If this was November, you've got a big enough list of shit you need done. $1,800, $2,000. You got a big enough list of shit that needs to be done. And if it was November right now, and I didn't have 18 bikes coming in, scheduled to come in on Tuesday. Not new bikes I have to sell. Bikes that our customers have bought from us over the years that are looking for service from us. And we're going to service them because they bought their bikes from us. They are at the top of the food chain. They are getting seasonal maintenances for their vehicle. They're getting things that need to be done. And
as well they should be.
Should be. Because I sold them a bike X number of years ago and I should support their bikes. We cannot take a bike in that's going to be a lift queen.
Yep.
Or honestly, just based on its size and dimensions, is going to be in the way of everything in my shop.
I think you should start giving people like that my number. I'd be more than happy to work on those types of bikes.
No, you're not.
You know what, though? This does present an opportunity. I think, like, and obviously with any kind of a bike, it's almost too much to handle, right? Like for one little guy. But like, this is a perfect opportunity for somebody that's like, you know what? I know the Sportster really well. I'm going to do 833 and 1200 Sportsters and be known as the Sportster guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get a guy who's the Dyna guy. And then you get a guy who's the V4 guy.
We had a guy last year for about 3 years. We had a guy's card. And he worked on Harleys. That's what he worked on. Mm-hmm. He worked on him in his garage. Loved his job. Loved what he did. I gave that guy's card away to everybody. Bring me more cards. Just bring me more cards. Bring me more cards. And he didn't show up last year. I was like, that's freaking weird. But I don't know anybody in his chain of command. I don't know anybody that I can contact about his status. And this Harley guy that we had serviced previously brought his bike in. I was like, yeah, we can't do that. And I said, didn't we send you off to another guy? He goes, yeah, he died.
Oh.
And I went, I can't lean into that.
Delzani.
Will not touch bikes that are over 14 years old. Oh, shit. And
why 14, not 15?
Well, okay. With Delzani, he's not saying the words. He doesn't have a print on the wall, I won't touch bikes over 14 years old. But he's very picky about what he works on. He's very, very selective about what he works on.
Plus, he lost Bruce. Yeah. So now he's
tires and brakes on just about anything, because if you can get the tires
and forks brakes and stuff like that.
I promise you, had this guy's issue been tires, brakes, I'm in. Three-hole oil change, I'm in all day long. When he left that, now this is no longer, we got the bike in and out in 4 hours, right? No, that's not this anymore. Now we're talking about, when we're talking about oil leaks in the motor, hold on. And I also would remind people, it's a twin cam 88, which is known to have a lot of other problems. We have to be very, very careful. We have to be the supreme guardians of Tom's time and my square footage, right? Because there's nothing worse than right now, we got to play ziggy-zaggy every time we come into my shop. I got an MP3 over there, and I got a sidecar rig over there, and we got this bike in the hallway and that bike in the hallway. And we're waiting on parts for a bike that's been on the lift for 6 months, and we got to be careful.
But how salty was he? What did he say when you said?
I said, please, please, please call Santas, because again, I learned a long time ago. What my brain wants to say is, I told you no. But what I have learned to say is, I'm going to give you a recommendation. Don't say no. Tell them where to go.
Yep.
Right? Don't say no. Just give them a place they can go. Whoever's the last in the chain will be the asshole. That's all it is. And I hate to say it that way, but that is exactly what it is.
It always pays to have somebody below you
somebody,
keep calling.
Somebody further down the chain.
Yeah.
And when you run out and you're the last guy in the chain and you decide you're not going to do it anymore.
There's a place downtown. Good friends of ours run it. It's called Skidmark Garage. You can take your bike down, and for a small monthly membership fee, you could have a lift, and you could maybe just fix it yourself.
That's what I tell everybody now.
One of his bylines is fix your own shit.
Are we going to fix your shit? No, we're not going to fix your shit.
We'll give you the guidance and support.
We'll give you the guidance and support so you can fix your own shit. And that's what's excellent about Skidmark. Now, the phone calls that I've taken the past week, I think it's funny how a bad idea can arrive at you from different directions in 24 hours. Can you work on my Suzuki Bergman? What year is it? Oh, it's 2006. No. Well, but you haven't even heard what's wrong with it. No, I'm not going to. Well, but it's okay. It's really easy. It shouldn't be any big deal. It will be a big deal. Something that was really easy got our lift clogged up for about a month, right? While we were waiting on parts that don't exist. Yes, that's right. There are certain pieces for that bike that we couldn't get from Suzuki. And I had to pull the, I don't want to do this, Sleepy, but I had to order parts for that bike on eBay/Amazon, whatever. And I looked at the package and I went, please don't be the belt that Sleepy put in his ATV. Right. Please don't be, because it came from the same place.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, please don't let this fuck this bike up. Because Tom's going to go through all the trouble of doing what you did, put everything on, make it all perfect, and then realize it doesn't fucking work. I had no option. I could not get Suzuki parts for the goddamn thing. So I had to buy. And it wasn't like there was one guy like, you know, Crazy Jim's House of Suzuki Parts that had, you know, all these fake Amazon parts. No, I had to go to Amazon for one part. I had to go to eBay for another part. Some parts showed up in 2 days. Some parts took over a month.
If Malosi doesn't make a belt for it,
right,
you got a problem.
You do.
Malosi makes belts for everything.
Everything. That's right. But there are clearly parts. There are clearly versions of certain vehicles that Malosi, for instance, said, we're not going to do that. There's not enough of them.
You know what, though? I also blame scooter companies and ATV companies, all these companies.
Yeah.
Like, the area for CVTs is pretty much the same. Why do these dick knobs have to have, like, oh, this belt needs to be...
1 millimeter difference.
Yeah, like, make...
And it won't work right.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, just centralize that shit. Like, every CVT from, like, 200 to 600 cc should all use the same fucking belt.
Every John Deere lawn tractor, every Cub Cadet probably uses the same belts to run the blades underneath it that they've used for 60 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because you go into one tractor supply company, and they've got, like... You go literally to tractor supply company.
No, it's an ass fuck.
But you get up there, and they have... They have belts, and they say, okay, what size belt you need? I need a 620 by 80 by 80 by 30. And they got a belt sizer on the wall, and you put it in, and you measure your belt.
Which is funny, because Dayco actually makes a belt that fits the BMW, the old BMW belt.
You can literally walk in
and buy a Dayco one from Napa.
Sure. Well, that's what it should be, right? And variator belts should be like, Gates should be like, hey, we're Gates. That's what we do. We make variator belts. And we have every known variator belt size on the planet.
Type in your year, make, and model of whatever you have, and we'll give you the exact correct belt.
And I promise you, that should exist. It does not exist. And if you are, be very careful in the things that you buy, people, because sometimes a sore dick deal could fuck you.
That's I learned that lesson with the Mitsubishi Outlander I bought, the 2010. There were no... I bought it without really looking the shit up.
Yeah.
And then I just had a simple exhaust leak, but it was the kind of exhaust leak where it wasn't like in a place you could just buy a pipe. It was like between a collector and a cat, all this other shit. You look it up, and there's only one. It's only Mitsubishi, and it was $2,100. And I was like, I'm not doing that. You know, like, I ended up... And I couldn't get it, whatever. But, yeah, you like, now I make a habit before I invest time or money into something that isn't, like, something dumb that's, you know, like, whatever... Like something I'm actually going to buy and like put money into, you know, like a good new bike or something.
Yeah.
You're looking up parts, man. It's important. It really is.
That's why every time you see a Suzuki Bergman on Marketplace, it's $1,200.
Right. Because somebody else already told them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I won't work on it.
Well, and it's also why every time you see a Honda Interceptor or a Honda Magna or a Honda Sabre.
Any V4.
And they're like, oh my God, I can't get hurt on this deal. It's an $800 bike. You can get hurt on that.
Yeah. It's a good idea by one of those 20-year run bikes. KLR 650 whatever. You know, like, they made those for 20
Well, but years. Then you That's run hard. Into the different and various model changes between the early and the late and the early, late, and the early, late, late, early.
Yep.
But a
DR 650, I guarantee.
Oh, DR 650 never changed.
Never changed one iota.
And that's a great suggestion for being like, huh, I wonder what motorcycle is going to be really, really easy to get parts for in the future.
I would dare to say like a Honda Reflex.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure
you can cockroaches in the
motorcycle world.
Yes.
You're talking about the motorcycle reflex, not the scooter reflex.
Scooter reflex.
Yeah, the scooter reflex.
Oh, those are garbage.
Well,
it's like the
I'm sure people would argue with you on that.
Well, cuz
I know a lot of people that got over 80,000 miles on that garbage.
They outsourced that to Linhai though, was the thing. So the early ones are great.
Yeah, that's
and then the later ones, I had a reflex for a while, and man, I tried everything to get that thing to work.
There are, as with anything, when it starts out, it's a great idea, but then they go, how can we make this cheaper?
Yep.
And if you watch things and you see, like, how do they make this cheaper? To murder the whole scooter thing, because I hate when we just stay on scooters.
Yeah.
But I had a cat call my shop the other day, and he goes, hey, you guys work on my Honda? I need a lot more information. It's an 86. Not looking good for you. Right? It's a 250. Looking worse for you. It's an Elite. Oh, you have an Elite, a Honda Elite 250? Look, the little part of my soul that was like, Elite 250s are the world's greatest motor scooter ever because it was the first motor scooter on the planet that would go 80 plus miles an hour, has a short wheelbase. It looks like a hippopotamus fucked a platypus. It's not a good looking bike.
No.
But they were hard.
Hippopotamus fucked Samsonite.
Yeah.
It's, and a Mazda Miata, or not a Miata, like...
A bad year Civic. Yeah, it was a bad 83 Civic leftover parts. It wasn't.
But that had did it have the flip up headlight?
No, that was the deluxe. No, the 150 deluxe.
That was the 125, 150. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say this: when you had them back in the day,
oh yeah.
So you see, there's a little part in the there was this little guy that lived in the back of my brain that used to be like, yeah, but Honda Elite 250s rock. And it turns out Liza got one for next to nothing. And one of the times I was visiting Liza in Santa Cruz, she goes, no, you just take the, you don't need to rent a car. You don't just take the Elite. Just take the Elite 250. And I jumped on this thing and I made it to the end of her street and I realized it was trying to kill me because all the suspension left the building in 87, right? And it was just, it didn't want to go. It didn't want to go where you pointed it. If you went over anything, it was just a giant wallow. Like the suspension didn't suspend even then. And so that little guy that was hiding in the back of my brain, I just fucking executed him. I just offed him right there with that bike. And I was like, you know what? Elite 250s are dead to me. So this guy says, you want it? No. Well, but I'm not going to ask any money for it. Still no.
Yeah.
Where is it? It's behind my mom's house. Of course it is. When did you get it? When I was 16. How long ago was that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, 2003 or something? 2004? Okay, all right. So it's been sitting for a really, really long time? Yeah, it's been sitting for a really long time. So you want me to go to your mom's house? Well, no, they're selling it and it has to be taken off the property. Oh, okay. So you basically need salvage. You need a scrap hauler. I said, I got a guy in Michigan that does that. And he goes, well, I said, he's not going to be any help to you. And he goes, well, just come by and pick it up. I said, I'll tell you what. Leave the keys and the title. Leave the keys in it with the title. Leave the garage door unlocked. And if I can find my way there, and if I look at it, and I determine that I want it, it'll disappear. But if I, the odds are I'm not.
Right.
Because it would have to be God's own Elite 250. For me to even be slightly interested in it. It's a bike that requires a tire size nobody's made in a long time. It's a bike that is not a great bike. It's a bike that the bearings and all the bolts that hold the exhaust and the swing arm together were designed to last 10 years and then become welded to each other, never to be taken apart again without a torch. It's a hard bike to deal with. And it's heavy. So it makes it no fun to put in the back of the truck. So we're going to see what happens. I don't think it's coming home with me. Not even under the hole. We'll just take it to mid-Ohio. Why? So I can get tetanus twice?
Right.
One, getting it on the trailer. Once, getting it off the trailer. And have somebody who wants to take it away for nothing and then complain when he gets tetanus.
Right. Yep. And you also, moving it in there, you put like 2 hours of labor into it. Yeah. So you're already into it for how much of labor.
Yep. We're just going to burn it anyways. Who the fuck cares? So yeah, that's that idea of like that obsolescence gets you nowhere. Unless you have an exit strategy, do not bring it home, Tom. There is just, because Tom moved his whole garage of shit from New Orleans up here. And I have a whole warehouse full of shit I've got to liquidate.
Yep.
And it's true.
I was running the numbers this morning trying to figure out what I was going to ask for the things that I'm like, done. I'm out.
I'm done. I'm out. Yeah.
Sleepy was making noises about wanting a Fuji Rabbit. I'm kind of thinking about putting them back at Dead Guy this evening.
I like the head shake. I am also down pairing.
You know that Fuji's, that's got Subaru DNA in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So it means, you know, worst case scenario, you know.
I heard one sold at Mecum for $27,000.
Oh, yeah.
It was a fake.
If I wanted a Fuji Rabbit, I would just take the snowmobile sled you left at my house, flip it over a scooter, and call it a day, dude.
So the Springer that I have on Lendlease to you.
Yeah.
Lendlease.
It's totally what it is at this point, honestly, Chris.
Giveaway.
It's what it
is. I'm digging in. I've been fixing it, been doing things, been mounting things.
Oh. So you went to Piston Power Show, mm-hmm. which you were surrounded by Springers. Yeah. I was watching your video and I was like, oh, I know. I can just hear Steve. Hey, it's a Springer. It's a Springer. Hey, it's
a
Springer.
There was a lot of bikes. There was a lot of bikes.
Yeah.
There was a, you know what? It was funny. I didn't have to go for work. So like,
oh, you didn't have to.
No, so like my other videographers went. I didn't have to go this time.
Okay.
So I had a ticket. Last minute I got an ticket, and I was like, all right, I guess I'll go on Saturday.
Right. Yeah.
the show was actually pretty good, man. It was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. It seemed like it was small because it was on the other side. I've never been on that.
How come we didn't get free tickets, for Christ's sake?
Because it was all, dude, they give out so many. Dude. It was a lottery. It was terrible. But I would have told you if I got them, but it was a last minute thing. Anyways, it was a really good show, but like the military collectors
right.
and stuff, like they collect, the one dude collected a military semi.
Right.
Like, how do you, like, where do you do with that, dude?
You start with at least 20 acres.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So if you're a kind of person that has 20 acres, then you can, you know, so I don't know if you know this about like gov deals and military surplus auctions and shit. The bigger something is, the freer it is.
Yes.
So, you know, for instance, 32, 33 feet long Airstream trailers are almost free to take off people's property. Even though they're Airstreams, they're still almost free. You get a short little sexy 16-foot Caravelle or something like that. Oh, no, it's 35, Bambino. 40 grand. Oh, you get a Bambi? Oh, big money. Big, big money. But you get these big giant ones that have been holding down daddy's plot for the past 30 some odd years. People are like, if you can get it out of there, just take it.
Put it in your pole barn.
Right. We've already aimed other implements at it, and it's up to the floors in mud. Good luck get it out of there.
Yeah.
And military equipment's the same way. If you want to buy one of these giant 5-ton Oshkosh trucks, right? The military took all of our taxpayers' money and built us, you know, these amazing multi-fuel vehicles. That's great. But you got to have a lot of property.
I was going to say, because I like that conversation, like, babe, I'm going to branch out from motorcycles. Yeah. I'm going to start collecting 45-foot long military rocket launching.
Oh, yeah. I have the Stevensons, the Stuart Stevenson trucks that the military used most recently that are cycling out. Oh, I could buy one of those cheap.
Like, get a command center where it's like a mile long.
Yeah.
Three rooftop air conditioners
it's ridiculous how cheap Humvees are now.
They dropped down to a point where the military was still selling them with road titles.
Yeah.
And they had dropped down to the point where they were $2,200, $2,300 a piece, but you had to go out to a place in Texas and cull your way through 100 ones that had the parts stripped off of them to find a good one, right? So it wasn't just like pull trigger, that's a good running truck, because the motors in those were fragile, kind term. But the military got in trouble because these things are not fucking safe on the freeway. Mm-hmm. I've driven them on the Autobahn. They are not safe at speeds.
There's a reason when you see a military convoy, they're going about 45 miles.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Well, dude, the one recording studio I worked at, my boss bought one. Yep. He bought one with a V8 in it or something. It didn't have the diesel. It had the gas motor.
Well, that's somebody fixed it.
And it was worse. It couldn't get out of its way. It was like a 60 mile an hour maybe. And at 60, the thing
felt... You just need to LS swap it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Not to turn this into the Humvee podcast, but I have a certain amount of experience with these. And I promise you that when the military finally, when our United States government said, we can no longer sell these to people with on-road titles, there's a reason for that. Mm. And that's because they don't handle safely. They're too goddamn wide. They're not the easiest thing to keep going.
Mm. There's no more parts.
It's a hard vehicle to live with. It's a tough vehicle to live with. But more importantly, if you put that out on the road with other people, it's one thing if somebody's out there in a military M151 Vietnam-era Jeep, he's going to kind of bounce off you a little bit. But a Humvee coming at you with no brakes, or a Humvee coming at you that can't turn or can't stop, that becomes a problem for everybody else in their very thin-skinned automobiles when that's hitting you. And they did. They took away the on-road certification of these things, so that guys were buying them and they were, you know, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to buy this Humvee that's actually in decent shape, and I'm going to buy that General Motors Hummer, Humvee, whatever, and do a title, you know, do a title swap. So people are trying to figure out all these ways to put good ones on the road because there was a limited period of time where they were actually coming with titles. Mm. Yep.
My nephew just won a shooting competition. He's in the military, and he's the gunner on a Humvee.
On a Humvee.
So, and now you're not out the top turret. The turret is an automated turret. You sit in the back seat. Right.
It's a power turret.
With joysticks, and he's a video. And so he just took Top Gun at a competition.
Oh, really?
was very stiff.
They're doing a lot of that. So a lot of the, they're using a lot of tank chassis and
like
stuff.
A coax gun.
And they're literally turning the turrets now from being the big turret where three people would hang out, now into being the people are down in the hull of the tank.
But it's a Humvee. So yeah. he's in the back of a Humvee.
Right, he's in the back of the Humvee.
That has a machine automated machine gun turret on top.
Yep. Oh, it's all joysticks. No, it's great. Yeah, but nobody wants to stick their ass up on top of a Humvee.
No, that's a great idea.
Right, because I've been up on the top of those things before. They offer zero protection. And they're like, oh, it's up armored. It's fine. I'm like, oh, great. So that means I got a quarter inch plate, steel plate going around me. That's cool. That's going to work because nobody's ever behind you or next to you ever. So, yeah, kind of an interesting thing. Military surplus stuff is real tricky. Yeah. I've been through a bunch of it, and I don't know today that I would run out like some cool old Chenoweth dune buggy or something. Some that'd be fun as fuck. Like I'd be all over that. But you know, I even went through a Cuck V, like you know, the Blazer, the when
That's
we were
one
in the
of
military.
More reasonable things you could buy.
Oh, the Blazers were great. The pickup trucks were great, but those were civilian vehicles that were just, you know,
if you're not
lightly militarized.
The crappy diesel that's in it, you can just swap it out for a Chevy 350 for almost no money. And
exactly.
Be a decent vehicle.
Yeah, I agree. Totally
with Dana
fun.
60 axles.
Oh, yeah.
But the show, to end the show thing.
Yeah.
So looked around the whole place and everything like that. And there's that one kid, Dan or something. He's a chopper kid. You know, he's always,
I know Dan.
Yeah. So he's also into the hot rods. Yep. He's part of the Slick something, Slick Weasels or Slick something, like whatever.
The car club.
Car club. But man, dude, everybody else, so like a 5,000 hot rods, all looking like ZZ Top, whatever, right? Like just all cheesy, corny, bunch of old dudes. Like you know, like the only hot rod part about them is like you know they have the golf tee that says hot rod on it on Saturdays. Like they just went to the magazines and just cut it out, whatever.
Sure,
you go into that back room with his dudes and like that whole Slick, whatever it was, hot rod team. They were all like full on legit 50s like hot rod racers. Like everything was to the tee. Like it was so rad. Like there had to be 40 cars, all completely period correct, or even like period correct, or just like cartoon version of period correct in some ways, but badass. Like there was no fancy paint on any of it. It was all just awesome. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
Yeah.
No painted bumpers. I can't stand painted bumpers. Like it should have been chrome, but you've painted it all yellow. Yeah. Canary yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those dudes, those cars, a whole bunch of willies, you know, like the big old fat willies, the big fat ass end.
There's nothing Steve likes more than a big old fat willy.
Especially when it's a little rough. But yeah, no, those guys were cool. That dude runs with cool, like all those, every single car in that back room was.
If you stay around
awesome.
Summit long enough, somebody's going to make you say Willis.
Oh, Willis.
Right, trust me. Yeah. I know. That's a secret handshake thing.
Yeah.
That's one of those ones where he wasn't a real car guy because he said Willis.
Well, whatever.
I know, believe me, but I'm telling you, I grew up around these assholes. Yeah.
But isn't it Willis? Isn't an apostrophe S?
Just Willis.
It's not Willis.
I promise you.
Yeah, he's probably right.
I promise you it is just a dick measuring thing.
I get you.
There's no apostrophe on the car. I just
like the cars, though. They're my favorite. They're
badass. Yeah, it's pretty fucking cool. The car shows thing, when I was watching your video, it makes me very happy to see it hasn't changed.
No.
It's the car. Mm-hmm. It's a piece of rope around it. Mm-hmm. It's like you said with that Corvette. Sometimes you can have a very normal car, but the more flair you put on it.
Yeah.
That guy had emptied out a thrift store.
The whole thing.
And he brought the whole thrift store to put on and around his
Let's talk about the car.
C3 Corvette.
Yeah, it was an 86 Vette, which there's nothing wrong with that. I liked it, the Vette. But like it wasn't a car show car. It was
it was not a car show car.
It was just a car.
But he brought a trailer full of like stuff he got at the thrift shop.
Like for some reason he had the car on a lift.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then a caution sign?
Right.
And then smoke? I don't even know.
I have no idea where he was going with that.
But here's the other thing.
Some people put a lot of effort into their dioramas.
They do.
There's more?
Oh, there's more. One thing more is just funny. One last thing.
Oh,
these dudes, like all these guys have these cars they put all this time and money into.
Hold on, I'm not one to interrupt you. No, I'm just teasing.
But they open everything, so you can't even see what the car looks like. Like the trunks, the hoods, the doors, everything's open on it.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't even get to see the body lines or anything of the car. It was kind of annoying, to be honest with you. Everything was open.
That's car show.
It's like a transformer in mid-transformation.
Right.
My all-time favorite was there was a purple Volkswagen Beetle at the car show a few years ago, and had airbrush paint job, and it was called the panty dropper.
he
misspelled panty dropper. He only put one P in it. It was called the panty dropper.
He was part of the Black Windows car club.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a nice Volkswagen van pickup truck today. Like, but the it was like a quad cab, but it had a bed on the back. And that was pretty neat.
Well, that's
it was in Pennsylvania.
The old transporter.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah. Looks like a van again with a back hacked off of it.
And it could it have been four-wheel drive? Because it kind of seemed like it was.
Yeah, they called those synchros.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, those are all gray market imports from years ago.
Yeah.
They look pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
If you got $30,000 to spend on a car that'll blow its head gaskets if you look at it sideways and don't want a Subaru, that's exactly what you get.
Our friend Adam Constantine was, he's a Volkswagen fetishist. And he's... The first time I saw him, he was driving what I believed to be a 1980s Volkswagen Synchro van. And he showed up, and I was like, fucking Synchro, you son of a bitch. He goes, those are just Synchro stickers.
I put a nice set of tires on him.
He did. He lifted up as much as high as the torsion bars would go, and he's Synchro. Instantly Synchro. So is there some talk about thievery?
Yes.
I wanted to bring this up because... Talking about Adam, his Honda Element was parked in front of his house in Westlake, legally parked, broad daylight, 1:59 p.m. in the afternoon. A white Ford Econoline E350 window van that apparently had garbage bags taped over the windows. Pulled up. It's all on the Ring cam. The guys pulled up.
Maybe that was your old van that got stolen.
No, mine was blah. No. You wouldn't be able to see mine. It was stealth. But anyway, it doesn't appear on film. But the one guy jumped out, and I guess the guy jumped out, and on the Ring cam, it was like 51 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
They had the cat, and they were fucking gone. Broad daylight, Westlake, Ohio. That is a place where bedroom community, nobody would ever think, in a million years, but how quickly they can operate, how quickly they can do that. Now, you guys were saying there was a follow-up to that story that the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. What were you saying, Dan?
Yeah, I think Adam posted it that took it in somewhere and they...
Ryan, he took it to Ryan.
Okay.
And Ryan looked at it and then he said, like he posted, Ryan said, hey, dude, don't worry about your cat being stolen because they stole about $8 worth of scrap metal because that cat, because he could tell by the pieces they cut, was like a generic, like fake cat.
It was a test tube.
So like he's like, so the thieves didn't get anything. So their effort went.
Okay, but here's where I'm going to play back.
Yep.
Regardless of the profit the thieves made for being stupid.
Right.
Okay?
No. Still sucks for Adam.
The cost for Adam to replace it and repair it.
Right. Still sucks.
To pass an e-check with an element... is bloody fucking expensive.
Yep.
Because they do not use Rock Auto shitbox O2 sensors. The Lambda sensors are fucking expensive if you want your computer to not throw codes. And even the shittiest catalytic converter you can put on there that will cause you to pass e-check and not throw codes is going to be about $450.
Yep.
So regardless, Adam went from having a vehicle that did pass smog to a vehicle that can't pass smog, and no matter what horrible fucking piece of shit the thieves ended up with, Adam's going to be out $700.
Well, no, yeah, he wasn't like taking away from that, but he was just saying like just to make you feel a tiny bit better.
I think when mine got stolen, because it got stolen in New Orleans, which is like saying, oh, okay, you woke up. But I had two brand new Honda oxygen sensors.
Yeah.
And it pissed me off more that they stole the oxygen sensor than the cat itself. Because you mentioned that earlier, too. Because the O2 sensors, I think, are about $300 a piece from Honda. Like, they're not cheap.
Well, have you seen...
The insurance company gave me no... Oh, well, you know, we've looked it up. We're going to give you a check for $500.
Right.
Well, the cat itself is $1,800, I think, from Honda. And another Oh, yeah. They're not cheap.
Damn.
So I've got Bosch high-end sensors in mind, and it still triggers the code.
It does.
Yeah.
Have you seen in Europe, guys were stealing Porsche and like all the high-end headlights, just ripping the metal and pulling the headlights out? And they're like, well, who's buying headlights? And they're like, you got it wrong. The headlights and the new Porsches and stuff, the LEDs are so intense that the weed growers are stealing the headlights and using them for fucking weed lights.
So they're not even going to stay in the automotive world.
No, because they're free grow lights that would cost them thousands. That's how good the LEDs are in the Porsche headlights.
There was a period of time in San Francisco when if you owned a motorcycle, a multi-cylindered motorcycle, BMW, Moto Guzzi, Honda inline four-cylinder, and if the spark plugs were visible to bystanders, they would go up and they would break the spark plugs off.
Oh.
They would just break the spark plug off. They wanted the insulator for smoking the cracks.
Oh. Mm.
Yep.
So that it wouldn't... And then somebody else said that they were also breaking them off because if you had that ceramic,
you could
throw it at a car window and it would shatter the car window and break into the car window much easier. Since there are, you know, spring awls and shit like that that break car windows even better, right? I'm pretty sure that they were probably using them as insulators for smoking the cracks. But I thought, what a, like where are we in the world that somebody's going to break your ceramics off of your spark plugs on your external cylinders? And my buddy...
The answer is Cleveland.
No, my buddy goes, I came out, I started my bike up. My bike was running like dog shit. And I was like, what's going on? He goes, my freaking spark plug leads are hanging off the side of it. I was running on two cylinders. He had a CB750. He goes, I'm running on two cylinders because some fuck knuckle stole my outside spark plugs. And I'm like, why would they steal your spark plugs? I thought they'd stolen his spark plugs. Yeah. And I was like, no, they just broke them off. But... more harm than anything else because now the center electrode's all bent up and you can't get your spark plug wrench on them to take them out. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, God damn it. You know, what the fuck, man? Why do people, you know, first of all, how jacked up are you to be like, you know what we need? Ceramic, you know? You know, my fingers keep getting burned on this all the time. I should invest in gloves? No, I should steal ceramic spark plugs.
Too stupid to go to any house that's been burnt out on the east side of Cleveland and grab some of the knob and tube out of it.
Mm.
Perfect crack pipe. I can tell you from experience.
Uh-oh.
I did look up in OEM Honda's OEM Honda Element Lambda sensors. The best price you're going to see is about $160 per.
Yep. And that's come down since mine got stolen.
And that's why it's like such a fucking shitty thing to do.
Right. And keep in mind, there are two of them.
Yeah, right, right.
There's an upper and a lower.
Yeah. And when mine got sawzalled, when they took mine, they cut the world's dumbest cut. They just did it like, they reached up with a sawzall with probably a 12-inch blade on it.
Yeah.
And they cut at an angle nobody could weld anything to ever. So I had to replace the fucking header.
Yep.
Ugh. And it's just like, the job never stopped being expensive. Because then I also found out when they were up there, they went through one of my transmission lines, my transmission cooler lines. So these guys, in the interest of taking a cat, they cut through a transmission line, they cut my header pipe off diagonally, which meant there was no option other than replacing. Because I was like, okay, I can take the header off and I can take the header out and I can weld it up and put a new flange on it. I was like, no, if I'm going to do that, I might as well fucking just replace the goddamn header.
So here's
Thank God these guys aren't surgeons.
Right.
No, but let me say something here. So everybody's worried about these dudes doing this.
Right.
But there's millions of them. There are people running everywhere.
Right.
But like, who's buying them? Like that's
the guys who should catch a fucking bullet is what I'm thinking.
Like,
you know,
like, how do they not? Like, there's only so many scrap places, and there's like you can't find all the dudes doing it, but you could find the people buying them, right? Like,
I'm telling you, buy them all cutoff wheels, so they'll just cut the bolts and take the whole thing off intact. Get them a little O2 sensor wrench. Take the O2 sensor.
You're putting too much thought into
it. At least then they'll put them on eBay or something, and you'll be able to buy them back at a reasonable price in good condition.
You can steal a DeWalt sawzall off a job for nothing. You can get the blades of the most expensive, if you're even worried about it.
Tom, you criminals.
Tom, that's what the guy used to take.
Yeah,
the fucking header off my element.
Just say when you if just he would give have them cut the proper tools for the job, and then they won't fuck things up.
They'll just sell that for more crap.
He had the proper tool. Yeah. He made the cut 3 inches upstream.
Mm-hmm.
So because he made the cut in the wrong spot, he cost me an extra $1,200.
Yeah.
Had he gone to a class and learned that the
you
only
had to
part
get out of there
the,
in 51 seconds.
Yes, okay, but, so we'll give them the
but
tools.
I could have cut it faster going where you should have gone we'll instead of going way up here.
So you're saying we need to give them the tools and have a class.
Mm-hmm. And well, whoever just, shows
if
up.
You want at least a tutorial.
Whoever
you
know. Shows up gets two behind the ear.
So the moral is buy a lowrider and lower that fucker down to the street. When
exactly.
You
so that was where I've...
Apparently. Well, you've seen people have built cages and stuff oh, like God, that, yeah. Rebarred the shit out of them.
Yeah.
The other joke is you take you weld $100 bills under the car, and then they take the $100 bills and your converter.
I swear to God, the second I got my F-150, and I was like, I got a new truck, that's great. And I was like, oh, shit. I looked underneath, I was like, God, there's a lot of catalytic converters under there. Right? And I was like, what? I swear to God, Ford is just trying to support home, like cat thieves, right? Cat burglars. And so I immediately was like, okay, well, this is going to be a problem because, you know, they like F-150s because there's a lot of them. They're new and they're easy to lay under because they're tall.
Yeah. Maybe right? They'll just look at it and be like, whoa, this is too big of a job for me. This is going to be a lot of work. I'm out of here.
Well, that's why.
I want a quick $20, not right. Fucking
the cage,
2 hours and $500.
Yeah. The cage is a good idea. You know, I see no problem with the whole cage concept.
You could have an aftermarket company does stamp steel little covers with security bolts on it.
Right. Sure. Yeah, so that's it. So I was already, I've been on all the websites. People are selling cages. I was like, I'll just cobble one up. I'll throw one together
then
myself.
You know what?
So,
some dude's going to get mad and be like, you know what? Fuck this guy and cut it anyways. And now you just have a cut muffler inside a cage.
The dude that tripped right? Over my VersaHaul and got mad that he tripped over my VersaHaul and smashed my window out. So because he doesn't look where he walks, he got pissed off and smashed my window out, right?
People.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah. Right, yeah, that's it.
So we solved a problem back in the 80s with people stealing batteries out of cars with super glue and razor blades. Right in front of the hood latch.
Oh, man. Ouch. We chained, in the 80s, we had a thing in my neighborhood where everybody chained their hoods closed. So you'd get a section of chain and you put a padlock up under it and you'd chain your hoods closed. And that was great until you drove shitboxes like we did. And then you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, my son of a bitch. And you're like, oh, where's the key? And you're like, okay, I got the key. Great. I got the key for the master lock. That's cool. Then you realize, no, we're in the King of Salt. Like that master lock became a fused element part of the chain exactly 2 weeks after you put it on.
Yeah. And so there are locks in the Titanic that would work better than that lock.
Yeah, no shit. Right. Now I need a sawzall. Wait, I wonder. I know who's got one. That's it. Yeah, my neighborhood growing up, batteries were just disappearing out of cars. And now it's cats. Now it's catalytic converters. Today, Tom had prepped up a Benelli 302. So Tom preps up a Benelli 302S. We haven't seen one of these bikes in a minute, right? We have tons of the TNT 135s. We're selling those. People are buying those. Great. Everybody's real happy with them. Hadn't had one of these around in a long time because I haven't had any demand for one. But I had a guy like straight up, hey, man, I need you to order this for me. And we ordered it. Green, of course. Oh, yeah. The only color that bike should ever be built in is green. So we got the thing in. It came in the metal crate. And the metal crate had been loaded on the truck by Godzilla himself. One bite. Just, and threw it in the truck, apparently. The crate was bent on the bottom so badly that the two sides of the crate were nearly touching each other. And I was like, well, this is... I took pictures of it with the cardboard still on because I was like, this is going to be a ship damage in transit claim. I know it. So the cardboard had like several... Somebody poked at it with forklift from about four different directions trying to figure out the right way to pick it up. And then both the rails underneath that the factory had put into, you know, so the crate would be movable by forklift, both of those were completely keel-hauled all the way across to the other side of the crate, the frame. Damn. I was like, this bike's going to get fucked. And we've seen them pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
Somebody hit that thing with a forklift at full speed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think they tried stabbing it in the places you're supposed to stab it, like where there's arrows and stuff pointing to it, and they missed it. Oh. And they got it jacked up, so they were like, nope, got to go super fast. And so they bent that fucking frame so hard. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be ugly. So get the cardboard off. And I mean, there was no longer a right angle anywhere on the crate. The cage crate was just fucked. So, you know, you go after it with the 13 millimeter and the impact, and you just got to take out like 40 bolts now. You got to take out 40 short bolts. And every time I would take a bolt, there'd be like 700 pounds of tension on that bolt because the bent steel, and I'd hit it and I'd vroom, and you know, you get like two turns and then it goes into Dugga Dugga mode.
Yeah.
So it was like, vroom, Dugga 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 Dugga, spang. And I was like, wow, this is dangerous.
Yeah, because so, all that shit is sharp, man.
It's I'm all sharp.
I remember it, so I'm picturing everything when you're doing
every part of that crate is deadly. Deadly sharp.
Yeah.
And been rusting in China for a while, right? So we know that's healthy. So I finally get the goddamn thing done, and the bike is listing hard to starboard. It is just like, I'm so unhappy right now. And I'm alone because it's oh dark 30 when I'm doing this. So I get this thing, and I'm like, okay, I just undo the straps real carefully. Put the side stand down and go, when I detach these straps, the whole operation is going to fall to the left, including the frame of the crate, the base of the crate. But it's okay. The side stand's going to catch it. And it did. It worked fucking perfect. When I took the straps off, the motorcycle was holding the crate in tension. So when I took the straps off, the crate popped off the motorcycle magically. And I'm like, okay. So I start inspecting the bike for damage going all around it. It was fine.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, man.
It was fine. I don't know how you scientifically engineer a crate so that the crate absorbs all of the damage.
I got my Buscadero.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry, but well, they're doing metal. You know what I mean? That's why they're doing angle iron crates. It's not just cardboard or yeah. wood or whatever.
That shit bends.
Same thing, dude. When I got my Buscadero, it looked like somebody fucking hit. I mean, it smashed. Like, I took video of it. Right. Like, this thing's going bad.
The bike's
going
to be fucked.
Yeah.
The bike's
and I opened it, and, like, it bent right around everything. Like, like the one point of the V was right by the fork and the header. And
yeah.
It stopped, but, like, nothing was touching. I couldn't believe it.
I was very really, surprised. Yeah. And then Tom prepped it, got everything done. I took it out for a ride this morning today, and I was like, man, okay. If it pulls, I'm not surprised, right? You know, if it's tweaked, I'm not surprised.
Like one of those things you did in a high school physics class where you try to throw an egg out the window, but you have to like make some kind of container.
Yes.
Like,
and everything is going to break except for the egg.
Exactly.
Like you want all of it to break except for the egg. It drove perfect. It was great. And then I realized I fucked up because it's a bright sunny day and I parked it out in front of my shop.
Oh no.
In front of my truck. Pride of place, and it's bright green, and it looks like a sport bike.
Mm.
Do not put a bright green sport bike in front of your shop on the first sunny day of the year. Oh, that did not end well. I was like, what is going on with my shop today? This place is hot and cold running assholes, and none of them have a penny. And then I realized, I looked out in front, and I was like, oh, bright green sport bike in front of my shop. That is not what we do here. Swapped it out, put an orange Stella out there. Solved the problem. Just instantly. It was like somebody turned a valve off. It went from being like, it went from being 23-year-old dudes with not a penny in their pocket to being old white men. Just changed the whole the dynamic of my shop instantly. It's crazy how fast that worked.
That's funny.
It's pretty cool, man. I dig it. So you picked up, today you picked up the monkey. And you pick. What else did you pick up today? Did you just get the monkey today?
Yeah, I got the Janus.
You just got okay. Yeah, you got the Janus yesterday. Okay, that's cool.
Monkey get the new shoes.
Monkey got new shoes. Monkey got new shoes. I was very surprised at how well that worked. It saved him a ton of money. But I would never tell anybody that they should go to Revzilla, but I promise you, it's worth a try. Find the actual fucking part number in the parts diagram for the tires on your bike. The part number is not V rubber 130 80 by 12. That's not the part number. The part number is 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10 11 12, whatever. That's a Honda part number. It's a big old part number. Look for the tire based on that. I started doing other stuff. I started checking other things like oil filters. Like, you know, you buy oil filters from, you know, High Flow Filtro or whatever you're going to buy from, and you're going to buy part number, model number air filter 123. But Honda's part number for that air filter or oil filter is a nice big number, nice big fat juicy number. Turns out does not work with oil filters. So the Honda branded oil filter is, they're very proud of that, even though we know who makes it. But the tires, for some reason, the tires were winner, winner, chicken dinner. And they were fresh too. Like, not only were they wrapped very nicely with all the Honda nomenclature on them and all the, you know, these are our Honda tires for this bike. But they were also, their age stamp on them, it wasn't like they were hanging around for a long time and they were discounted. They were born this year. So that's very surprising. That is a bonus, yeah. Because you'd think for the price they were asking that they were like, oh, these have been on the shelf for 5 years and, you know, whatever. No, they're fresh. So yeah, that was very surprising to
they're
actually
not fresh
get a deal.
Unless they're mackerel fresh.
Yeah. So did it ride good going home? Everything's cool? Oh, yeah. Everything's cool? That's good. Good to know. The
they just had a mass exodus.
It was. That was a hard push.
Jeez. I think they're hungry or something.
I found the bushings you need for the Springer.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I found them. Okay. So there's a kit. Go figure.
I was looking them up. Some of them are crazy.
They are crazy.
Fuck. I was like, God,
they're crazy. There's some crazy goddamn stuff. I mean, Harley Davidson really said we're going to make this Springer thing work.
Yeah.
We don't care how we do it, but we're going to make this thing work. And the good news is, if you drill down hard enough in the Harley Davidson owners forums, you'll find that one guy who's like, "You guys are all stupid. These are what you need." And I found that guy.
Okay.
And the guy's got part numbers and the whole shoot and match. And I was like, that's cool, because I had looked at the Harley Davidson part numbers for them and the Harley Davidson, you know, the 9 foot wide parts book. And I'd found them in there. And the guys are like, no. Harley wants to sell you a new set of those every year.
Yeah.
So buy these ones over here that are for industrial applications, and you'll have much more fun with them.
Sick.
I was pretty excited to find those. Like, yeah, that's pretty good. And I found some other stuff while I was wandering around.
I started to watch some videos. I'm trying to like learn the process. I'm like figuring it out, because it's not a normal fork, man. That's a whole
Springers are Springers, man. Yeah,
it's like a whole thing.
Springers are funny. I've had Springers on a couple of different. I had Springers on British motorcycles I've owned in the past. And I've never owned a Harley Springer before, but I figured it was all the same, and I realized it's not. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely not the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
was doing some reading. I think the actual little shock on it, mm-hmm. they go bad pretty quick.
Do they?
A few years and stuff. So that can make it all bouncy, too, and stuff.
My problem was wasn't so much that it was bouncy. It was that every time I would hit a bump or anything, the noise involved was a series of different clanks.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just like a clunk, like, you know, you've got a fork problem, you might have a clunk, you know, clunk, clack, right. Click. This is like clunk, 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 clunk. Every time you hit a bump and you're like, I can't live with that.
Yeah. And I think it pulls to the right a little bit, too, like from being loose, just like a tiny bit. Or
it might. It might.
I'm wiggling on it. We're going to work on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about you. I'm excited you're doing that. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I think it's really
fun,
cool.
Man.
Yeah.
The simplistic, it is pretty interesting to see how simple Harleys are.
Yeah.
Like compared to like you look at like, you know, a three-cylinder bike with all the injections and all the stuff under the seats and everything. This thing's just sitting there. You're like, oh, there's a cylinder. There's your injection unit. Yep. There, you know.
Did you spend any time looking at that cruise control up on the handlebars?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah. That is the let's make this project harder than it needs to be.
I thought it was like, at first I was like, okay, this is electronic? And like I'm following it down. And then we figured out the module that went to the brake so that it would release.
Right.
But then I'm like, okay. So it's still electronic.
Right.
We're like, no, I don't think it is. And so we got it going when we started it, and we turned the thing on, and you hit it. It literally is just an electronic.
It's an electronic squeezer is what it is. And what I think is crazy is every Harley Davidson in the world and a lot of CB750s have a throttle stop screw that's under the throttle housing.
Right.
So every Harley I've owned in my life, pretty much, you're going down the road, you get your wrist gets tired. You reach your thumb down and you just crank that screw just one or two turns, and it holds your throttle. It's literally a throttle lock screw. You just give it a turn and you can let go of the handlebar and cruise down the road. Cruise control is good as day. Harley already had one.
Yeah.
It's been that way on Harleys for most of the Harleys I've owned have had that. And then this contraption that they put up on there is literally like a mechanical. They have a thumb activated cruise control.
Like it doesn't need
They've sold for a million years,
it
right?
Doesn't need to have electronics involved in
no,
it.
No, there's no reason to have electronics. It's not like you can press a button and it goes up 1 mile an hour like a true electronic digital system. This is literally press this button, it squeezes.
Yeah.
Electronically it like squeezes. It's just a sphincter. It's just you press the button and it goes.
Hi, neighbor.
I would really like to see what it's doing in there. I'm not kidding.
I think it's just rotating a cam that's like wedge-shaped. Okay. So I think it's just rotating it like a wedge-shaped cam just a little bit. It is the silliest cruise control. And it's also god-awful huge. So in a motorcycle...
It looks like it would match a watch. If you had like a big watch.
Yeah. You know, when we were kids, we had this thing we'd put on the handlebars of our bikes and we'd grip it and it would go...
It's kind of the same thing with Harleys, actually. You go...
Right. And this thing's sitting up there and it's like a smaller version of that. And it's chrome plated in the most Mickey Mouse fashion.
Yeah.
It looks like an 80s transistor radio. And it is just sad.
But the dude who originally put that together fucking loved it, though.
Oh,
because to change the bars and stuff on it, that's a project.
I know it is.
Everything is like he ran all the wires through the bars, everything through the bars.
Yeah.
Those big 2000 big dumb bars.
They're the biggest, dumbest bars ever.
It looks like a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Like, it's so thick on the top.
And it's all still rubber-mounted.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's rubber-mounted, those bushing, I mean, you should never, I mean, to me, a Springer, that's great. The Springer, that's fine. But you got to get rid of all the rubber mounting because you do not want a motorcycle that's going to be like vague, right?
Yeah.
There's like a half an inch of play before things start happening.
Yeah.
And I know they're trying to isolate the vibration of the motorcycle away from the rider. That's all well and good. But I promise you, getting rid of anything that's rubber in that system is going to make that bike better.
You know it works, though, because the mirrors, you can see out of them. Like, right? And the mirrors are just chilling.
But the mirrors are level?
Yeah, they're just chilling.
So they figured out a way through the right softness of rubber, which it's very soft.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to move the bike around the garage, and you're like, you turn the handlebars to full lock left, and then the handlebars catch up to the forks.
Yeah, no, there's definitely...
They're about a 2-inch delay.
Yeah.
So there's basically two limp dicks in there.
Oh, yeah. God.
And I think I got to try to reset center. I think it's like a little off. It's getting there. We're getting there. Just figuring it out.
Welcome to Harley.
Yeah.
That's it. Welcome
it's
to
all
the world.
Precision engineering. That's
it is all the precision engineering. Yeah.
You know what? I give them credit, though. Like I think Harley did this. If it needed to hold 10 foot-pounds of strength, they said, just put a zero on the end.
Right.
100 foot-pounds. Everything is so overbuilt on every fucking thing.
Engineer by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
And it'll never break.
Right.
Because they've seen who some of their riders are. That's why Harleys have, like, people are like, what's the weight capacity of this Harley? Infinite.
Yeah.
If you fit on it, you can ride it. Right?
Well, and do they have, if I went to the Harley dealer and I was a man of certain girth and my woman was of certain girth and I wanted to buy a new bike, do they sell like shocks for larger dudes?
Yes.
Okay. Like
absolutely.
Girth shocks.
The company called Progressive has made a ton of money on Harley Davidsons having a rather short travel,
right?
But very heavy operators.
Yep. Yeah. But I meant, you know, like, you know how they usually have names for shit, like, you know.
It's
like, so is this going to be like big boy jumpers, or I don't know, some shit like that? You know.
I think they would be leaning into the farm side to be like, these are the Brahmas, right? And then you could get mastodon shocks.
I think at that point you just switch to air ride,
absolutely. Yeah,
right. Just go straight to the air control. Air ride.
Well, they do have airbags. Yeah. They have airbags in the
car. Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. I've had to replace them many times.
It's a very, very strange world that operates in, that, you know, that you live in with that bike. And,
well, you know what I am finding, man, and I think this is what's going on, and you were ahead of the game on this anyways, but I think that since Harleys are affordable now, like, you know, I've been looking online and stuff.
Right.
You know, $5,000 and you are into a good whatever you want. Dyna through Rove Glide through anything. Like, you know, like you're in it, right?
Yeah.
So I think now that they're affordable, I think enough younger people that maybe aren't into the whole douchebaggery of like the cosplay of wearing all the bullshit and going and like slapping their women and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they're starting to buy them. And like, you can see on forums now where guys are like, you know, not talking like the dumb shit.
Right.
It's like, I don't know. It's like a
I think the brother Clibbins, right?
Brother.
I think that has now become such a punchline. In the gun community, they call them FUDs, right? You're like Elmer Fudd kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And so, like, nobody wants to be a FUD,
right?
So I think that in the motorcycle community, that whole, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow cosplay pirate on the weekend thing, I think that's now gotten to the point where it's just like, wow, you know,
right.
That's only cool for guys in that set.
Right, but at the same time, I'm not making fun of the guy who has 87,000 miles on his fucking bike and has
not even,
you know, ratted face or something like that. It's just the dudes who just play that fucking game. You know what I mean?
Only 72 more months of payments. It's all his.
Moving along.
Moving along. Moving along. So what do I have pulled up on the screen here today? Put that up there, down there. Little monkey bikes, right? Little mini trails.
Mini trails.
Look at that
first
thing.
First or second year. Yeah,
how cool is that?
That was my first bike, but mine was red.
Fucking cool bikes. I mean, these things just never stopped being cool. Pete and I were talking earlier about the joy on a young person's face, a child's face, when they get their first dirt bike or they get their first go-kart. Tell the guys, because I think this story is fun, you're doing some go-kart maintenance.
Yeah, a kid across the street from me, his mom bought him a go-kart at Christmas time. A used one.
Right.
A Chinese-made dingo or whatever they call them, you know, the Predator motor. The kid doesn't know how to make it run. He doesn't know anything about how choke works or, you know, they had four bald tires on it, change the tires for him. And take the tires apart, and then the wheel bearings are bad, so I got to change the wheel bearings. But, you know, just kind of showing the kid the ropes about how to, like, start it, and, you know, fresh fuel, check the oil, you know, this, that, the other thing. But just today, you know, the kid's going up and down the street after he couldn't get it started, so I got it started for him. And then just the kid's like 10, 12 years old, driving up and down the street with a smile from ear to ear. Absolutely. It was just like me 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I just remember the freedom of getting on a go-kart or a mini bike and just ripping, just absolute ripping. And yeah, it just kind of was fun.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Dude, it's that just bike, so much fun.
That picture just sitting there,
yeah.
I can literally smell that day.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like literally, literally, whatever. Right. Yeah, that, both of those.
I can virtually.
Yes, right. Virtually.
I can whatever. Virtually, yeah. But it's true, isn't it?
Like, yeah. Like, it takes me back to, like, I'm laying in the grass staring at that. It's not mine.
Right.
And I got to ride it, and now I'm mad.
Right.
In a good way, you know, like I'm obsessed. Or, but, you know,
and it also could be the kind of thing too where you were, you know, in my, as a young kid, I had to save up $1,400 newspaper money. That's a lot of newspaper money. When I was a kid, I had to save up $1,400 because I wanted a very particular Pook Magnum Mark II moped. But what I realized that was along the way to that Pook Magnum Mark II moped, that I could also buy any number of $200 lightly destroyed mini bikes, right? That I could buy a Honda CB125, right, for $200. And that was the first time as a kid I realized, well, it's like, just because Honda's charging, you know, $600 for that, doesn't mean that you have to save up $600. It just means you got to find a slightly older, slightly more broken one. And in my household, my neighborhood, like, older, more broken was very available.
Yeah.
You know, we were just the next food tier down. We were just the next level down the food chain from the kids that were in the nice neighborhoods who would break their toys. And then we just had to go get them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and had to go get them and pick them up and fix them and, you know, do whatever that we were doing that turned me into the idiot that I am today that still buys broken toys. You know, that's it. So did one of these, were you talking about somebody got a bike stolen?
No, that was the new Honda Monkey.
A new Monkey?
Not an old trail style Monkey.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. A friend of the podcast, he was riding it here in one of the gentrified neighborhoods of Cleveland.
Battery Park?
Called?
Tremont. He was Tremont. In Tremont.
Oh, Tremont. Okay, yeah, we all know Tremont.
No, he parked it, went to a bar, came out of the bar, and the monkey was gone, and then they found a Ring doorbell camera, a security camera. So I saw the footage of it, of just guys pulling up in a pickup truck, getting out of the truck, loading it up, and driving off.
Holy shit.
He watched him steal it.
Yeah.
Not in real time.
But in the Ring door camera, right? Because we have camera coverage of everything.
Right there, exactly. But yeah, they couldn't make out the license plate number or anything. It was at night.
Man.
So there
was, that's vicious. Kinda,
yeah, you could see that.
So lights. Now, if you're not currently, if you live in a part of the world that hasn't been a victim of extraordinarily efficient, fast theft. You're going to have to act differently now. I hate to say it. We're going to have to do. It's time to buy the big fuck-off locks. It's time to start carrying the big cable locks and that kind
of
shit.
Well, when we travel with the monkeys, you leave them outside of a hotel or you're going to leave it for a couple hours wherever you go.
Right.
We chain them together.
So you have to.
Because one monkey weighs 230 pounds.
Yep.
Two or three of them.
Yeah. It becomes a big problem.
Gangled together makes it a big, bit more difficult.
Yep. When we were traveling from Mid-Ohio last year, Oscar and I were, the week after Mid-Ohio, Oscar and I were going to Denver for a rally out there. And one of the ladies at Mid-Ohio had just bought a dirt bike. And it was a really cute, XT125 dirt bike. Now, it wasn't a show bike. It wasn't anything special. It was just a cheap dirt bike. And so we'd put it on the back of the van on the VersaHaul. And I had put a pretty stout cable lock, locking it to my VersaHaul. And then I have another cable lock that I have that locks the VersaHaul to the van. So, on that multiple locks concept. Oscar and I pulled up to the first hotel that we thought we were going to stay at. And we were like, nope, not that one. And Oscar was like, no, we're not staying here. And I was like, yeah, no, we're not staying here, dude. So we turned around, doubled back, and went to a nicer hotel. And we found a nicer hotel, and we stayed at the nicer hotel, where the back window of the van was in a office, like where the people who work there. Where the people who work there got to have cigarette breaks, where the people who work there from the managerial office can see the back of the van all the time. And so Oscar and I went, we went to the bar or whatever and came back at 2 o'clock. Oscar's an early riser, right? He gets up at 6 o'clock and goes out and has a walk or whatever. Fine. So I know that it was really only unattended from about 2 until about 6. Right? And I said, dirt bike's still back there, right? You went out there. Yeah, it's still there. It's fine. This is great. So we load out of the hotel. I go out there. It was kind of still there. During the night, somebody had made an attempt on both of the locks, on both the cable locks. It's a good thing we just didn't put the damn thing in drive and drive away, because they had cut all the tie-down straps. So they'd cut all the tie-down straps, and you could see where they were using some sort of a cutting device to go after my cable locks. And I use kryptonite cable locks. And I'm not saying they're the best cable locks in the world, but I'm saying they have them at Home Depot.
They don't call them for kryptonite for nothing, though.
Well, somebody had gotten through about 50% of the way through the kryptonite lock that held the bike to the VersaHaul. They made about 50% of the way through. And who knows whether somebody came out and said something. I asked the office staff. I was like, did anybody report... Right. Somebody stealing the bike off the back of our truck 8 feet away from the window where you watch TV all night.
Right.
No, man, I didn't know anything about it. Well, come out here and take a look. And they rolled the video camera back, the footage back. And yeah, sure as hell, some pickup truck pulled in right next to our shit, knew exactly where the camera was because they put the pickup truck directly in the line of the camera. And some guy got out of the back, and I saw him come out with bolt cutters and made an attempt with the bolt cutters. And cable locks suck if you're trying to cut them. I hate cutting cable locks.
Jade links cut.
Right.
A cable doesn't want to cut.
Cables are chew on pain them. In the ass. Yeah. Yeah. And so I generally try to make it as irritating as possible for these. And yeah, so they almost got it. They almost fucking got it. And...
I hate people, man.
Well, and this is that thing is like, you got to lock it up, man. Yeah you got to lock it up. And it's not getting any better out there. It's getting worse.
Well, everybody always used to ask me, this is what kind of security do you use? Mm-hmm. Full coverage insurance. Because honestly, if they want it bad enough, mm-hmm. they will get it.
I promise
you. And when you get it back, you don't want it.
No. But... my main thing, though, is I do believe in locks, and I do believe in locking your shit up, because I also work at a shop.
I carry a big, thick kryptonite still.
Physical security is the cheapest, most effective security.
Make it a pain.
A locked door, a padlock, access denial.
Yeah, because unless you're paying Haggerty, like, crazy custom rates for your vintage bike, they're going to fucking be, oh, you have full coverage on this bike? Great, here's your $28.
This is my job. This is what I do. What people don't realize, one of the biggest parts of running a shop is dealing with the stolen shit.
Yep.
And I promise you, your six-month-old bike that cost you $10,000, you're going to get a check for about $6,000.
Yep.
Do you have gap insurance? Great. You're going to pay a $1,000 deductible, and thank God you had gap insurance, right? Because it is just a series of deductibles. Are you going to get another brand new $10,000 bike? No. You're going to come out of pocket about $2,000 to get a brand new $10,000 bike. Because you don't get the, you, unless the bike is a certain period of time old, you're not going to get the tax money back. You're never going to get the prep. You're never going to get the freight. You're never going to get the shipping. You're never going to get the document fees. Like, that's all gone. That's all fucking gone. I promise you, a $90 lock is better than a $500 deductible. Mm-hmm. And on some of the $90 locks, like Oxfords and, you know, some different brands that are out there, Oxfords, they will pay your deductible if your bike gets stolen. So that's something to look at too. We carry a couple of different ones at the shop. It's worth $100, you know. And I've got one that I particularly like. It's a cable lock, but it's got a disc lock style lock added to it. So you can get kind of weird with it because it's 6 feet long.
As long as something reminds you that that fucking disc lock is on there.
Well, this is a big kryptonite U-shank lock. Okay. So that the idea is you're not going to... Yeah. I've driven away on a couple of disc locks before. Yeah, dude. That sucks.
That ain't no fun.
That ain't no fun at all.
If you look at like bicycle forums, most of them now have two of the big shackle locks around the wheels and then the big thick heavy chain lock around whatever you're tying it to, because it's like I said, I came from the area where people, if you leave it outside, it will get stolen.
Every time I roll out and I've got my big cable lock around me like a bandolero, I'm always like scared of when to fall off my bike though, because I know the thing's going to cut me in half. Right? I just know it. There's no good
just
place
go
to
go down skidding like some kind of cool stuff.
It's going to suck so much. It is going to suck bad. I don't ever want to crash with that giant fucking kryptonite lock on me. But yeah, and I used to have the New York City forget about it with the big links. And I watched a lockpicking lawyer attack one of those once, and he was like, oh, here you go. And it was done.
Yeah.
And I saw another guy was like, here, you want to defeat that lock? It's called a ram set. Mm. And a ram set from Home Depot uses a 22 caliber cartridge with no bullet. And it goes through everything. Mm-hmm. There's no lock it doesn't just fucking vaporize. And it's this big, and you can carry it in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Walk up to a lock and you're gonzo. So it is tough. I hate to think that we're in a position right now, and I know podcast listeners are going to be like, you, we've been dealing with this for 20 years. Cleveland's just now getting the memo. Look, Ohio's behind the times. I will admit it.
But you know what? Those kind of locks, what they do... What you're talking about is professionals, and you're not going to stop a professional no matter what. Yeah. What a lock like that does is deter opportunities and, and crimes of opportunity and people that are kind of like, let's try to take, it's got a lock. Fuck that. Like
the guys who took that monkey were going to take 3 sets of rims tonight. They were going to take 15 catalytic converters. They are just out there stealing shit.
Yeah.
They're just stealing shit constantly. And I'll bet you the truck they were in was stolen. Because when my van got stolen, the detectives were like, that van is going out to steal many other things.
Dude, that Channel 5 kid, that Andrew from YouTube, Channel 5 News he does or whatever.
Okay.
He did a thing where he went undercover with the Kia boys.
Oh, God.
And they steal Kias and stuff. They only get $50 for those cars and $100 for those cars for exactly what you're talking about.
Wow.
So they go and steal them.
Right.
They go to the hood, and whoever needs to go and either like shoot somebody or deliver this.
That's their vehicle they used to do it in.
That's it. Right. $100
That's the dump vehicle.
It's $100 with keys. It's $50 without keys.
Jesus.
It was crazy, man.
It is crazy.
To think of how little money for, like, that's somebody's car.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, how many payments, their transportation or anything, and these people are slinging $50 for that, you know?
We got a motorcycle recovery back a few years ago, and the, I called the guy up and I went, you can come here and you can look at it. You don't want it, but it's yours. It's here. Mm-hmm. The insurance company paid to tow it here. That's nice. But I don't think you're going to want to do anything with it when you get here. And the dude showed up and this Moto Guzzi was twisted in every way it could be twisted. There was no part of it that was... salvageable at all. The insurance company is going to go through the machinations of insurance company. They're going to get it out of the impound. They're going to bring it to us. They're going to make us do an estimate. And my estimate's just like, it's totally fucked. The cost to repair is exactly $1 more than the cost of buying a new one. Send that off to the insurance company. Make them send an evaluator out. Then they send an evaluator out, and the evaluator comes out and looks at it and goes, yep, okay. What's your storage rate? You know, that we're going to pay you storage for every day it's been here. We're going to pay you money for writing the estimate. That's great. But we're going to send yet another vehicle out to come and pick it up. Do not buy motorcycles from Copart. All of you people that have been calling my shop this week, telling me what a great deal you got buying this bike at Copart, all you need is an ignition. You don't just need an ignition.
Yeah.
In all likelihood, if the bike is less than 20 years old, you need an ECU, you need an antenna for the key fob, you need the lock assemblies, and maybe a fuel injector body. Why? Because they designed them in an anti-theft fashion so that, you were talking about the smart criminals. The smart criminals know to leave it the fuck alone. And if your motorcycle has any sort of a little light that flashes on the dashboard when you're not riding it to let people know that it's got this anti-theft system on it, the manufacturer has built all of that. They've cooked all of that in so that the world knows that stealing your SV650 isn't going to mean just going and buying a new tumbler lock off of eBay for $45, right? No, all of us who own vintage old Hondas, we all know we can buy an entire set of locks to match the key that has the code printed on it, you know, or vice versa. That's not the way with modern bikes, fuel-injected bikes. Buying a... There was only $500 on Copart. Yes, it's very easy to spend $1,200 to $1,500 on the three or four components you will need to make that bike a viable running machine again. Unfortunately, it will also come with a salvage title. Right. And changing a salvage title into a running street legal road title could be very expensive in your state. Could be a giant pain in the dick you don't want to deal with. This week has been my week of people calling me with, I got a bike, you can't believe it, it's a great deal, it's only got 3,000 miles on it, it's only 3 years old, and I got it at Copart for $1,200, or I got it at Copart for $1,000. Yes, I understand, you have the internet. Yes, I understand, you were able to log into Copart and get a buyer's number. Yes, I understand, you gave Copart your credit card number. They're a business, that's what they do. They want you to buy shit from them. That's how they get rid of the stuff they get from the insurance company. But they're also in the business to make money. They're not there to do you any favors. They're not telling you how much money it's going to cost you to put this bike back into service. And there also could be some some undisclosed problems like, Tom, how good does the steering lock work on that dude's R3?
What steering lock?
It's gone. It's literally vaporized. Because the first time somebody stole it, they just overpowered the handlebars. Mm-hmm. They overpowered the handlebars. A cast piece of metal on the frame went into low Earth orbit. And that's how they stole the bike the first time. They kicked the handlebars. They put it in neutral and they fucking walked it away. Because that's all it takes. But the problem is once that piece of metal has been ejected from the frame, you can't put it back on. And an insurance company will total a bike out if that is missing because you can't put it back on.
That brings up Vespa. The big problem with Vespa is when they come back from theft because there's a round cylinder welded to the side of the frame. And every jackass always takes a hammer thinking they can hammer that thing out and start the bike up.
Right.
So they hammer it right off the side of the frame. And what do you have? A frame damaged Vespa.
When his monkey came into the shop, I put the monkey outside today, and because I don't want bikes just being pushed away from my shop, I locked the columns, right? So I put his monkey out today, but I just forgot for a second. I was like, oh, this monkey has had a traumatic event in its life. So its steering column lock don't work so good. It took me 3 or 4 times to be like, oh, no, not there. Oh, there it is. And yep. I eventually found it. It's about a half an inch away from where it's supposed to be because it's seen some shit, right? But generally speaking, when motorcycles get stolen and things like that, the steering column locks get vaporized, right? When you're buying something and the steering column lock doesn't work or it's missing, that bike probably has been stolen or wrecked kind of hard, right? Most of the time when they're just...
It fell over in the garage once.
With the steering column locked.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hard. The boot marks mean nothing.
Right.
Right. That's it. But be careful about that.
That's a good point.
Because if you're buying a bike and it doesn't have a lockable steering column, it may have in fact been stolen. Here's how honest people get in big fucking trouble. I happen to know a fella here in town that bought a bike at Copart. Cool. All right. Good enough. He went and found all the parts for his Honda Shadow, and he rebuilt his Honda Shadow. He did a beautiful job. Very affordably, got the bike running. Super great, super cool. Downside, that motorcycle in its life, probably 2 years before he got it, had been marked as being stolen. The police department is very good about listing shit that's stolen on national databases. They are very bad at taking things off of those databases because once it's stolen and Copart gets it and you buy it, nobody ever closed the circle and said, hey, by the way, I want to let you know that bike isn't stolen anymore. It's been recovered. And if you get a police officer to pick up the phone and you tell them that, they're going to say, cool, click. Nobody will ever do anything about it. I know there's a way to make vehicles reported stolen, because I used to do that as part of my job, but I have never seen anybody report one unstolen. So here he goes, this really nice guy I know that spent all this money getting this VT1100 back on the road and being all sweet, couldn't get a title for it, couldn't get insurance on it, couldn't get plates for it, because every step of the chain he went to try to get this bike back legally on the road, everyone said, no, it's a stolen vehicle. That bike comes up stolen. So he's like, he's petitioning the state of Ohio. He's sending letters to people. He's getting the state highway patrol to do an inspection on it. He did everything he could. He never could end up with a title on the vehicle. And every time he'd call insurance, he'd be like, yeah, I need insurance. They're like, it's a stolen vehicle. You can't insure a stolen vehicle. He's like, it's not stolen anymore. And it even happened to one of our friends who got their bike stolen and got their own bike back. Because their bike had been stolen, one of our customers. It had then been unstolen. Yeah. And we fixed it. And the insurance paid a lot of money for us to fix it. He still does not have a title. Right? And it was his bike originally titled in his name.
You're kind of right. I don't think I've ever heard of something being taken off, like ever.
I'm going to promise you, I have two instances that I'm aware of in my world of people that cannot get titles for their vehicles right now today because they were at one point reported stolen.
So basically, if it doesn't come with a title, even with a Copart, like what's Copart?
Copart gives you a salvage title.
Yeah, you do get a salvage title.
Copart gives you a salvage title, and a stolen title, a theft recovery title, may not be branded theft recovery. It may be branded salvage because it probably went to the impound lot.
So you have no idea then at that point. So
you have no
just,
idea.
Yeah, so Copart can just fuck you.
Yeah, salvage titles aren't any fun to clear either.
No.
Because in most states, the title remains branded salvage for the rest of its life.
Yeah.
So it'll never, I did the thing. I went to the state highway patrol. I did all the things I had to do. And you're like, great, rebuilt salvage. You're like, shit.
I was going to say, the best you can hope for is a rebuilt.
Rebuilt right. Salvage. And you're like, fuck, man.
Salvage means not roadable.
Right.
Rebuilt salvage means it's been
inspected.
Back into roadable condition.
Right, yeah.
But it's still going to say rebuilt salvage.
Correct, yep. We've gone through a few of them, and you do have to show, if you're going to do it, make sure you have receipts. Be able to prove that you spent money. Be able to prove that you did the work.
Yep.
Because they don't want to hear like, oh, I'm a hobbyist and I do this shit in my garage. That's fine. The guy, at least in our state, they're being inspected by a state patrolman who actually has a badge and a gun and coveralls.
Yeah, it's fucking scary.
Well, and if he doesn't think you got the right number of receipts, he's not going to give you the certificate.
I didn't have any receipts. I took the broken part.
That's pretty good.
I took the part with me.
That's pretty good.
The part. And he was like, oh, okay. All right.
Good enough.
How much was that? And I was like, $11.
Get the hell out of here.
No.
That's cool.
It was the shift shaft.
Oh, shift shaft.
Yeah,
all right.
That was it, dude.
That's pretty good.
$11.
That's all right. No. Yeah. When we have ones that are salvaged, you know, was there an invoice? Of course there's an invoice. We're a shop. Yeah. Bring us the invoice. Here's the invoice. Okay, and then he's starting crawling there with a little flashlight.
Oh, they take their job really fucking seriously. It's
crazy.
Dude. Like, I've never seen something so meticulous. Like, they wore gloves.
And they were picky about shit.
Yeah.
They were picky about stuff. They're like, you know, you're missing the clamp that holds this wiring on right there. It's like, where did you go to school?
Did you know that your turn signal flashing, is it can be too fast?
I do know that.
He was like, he goes, that turn signal's a little fast.
Right? A little fast.
And I'm like, I go, it's not LED. I'm like, it's stock. That's the way it came from the factory.
Let me turn it down. Let me go adjust my turn signal speed switch.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell, man? Quit being a dick.
That was interesting. I went there. I was so unaware of how intense that would be.
Oh,
I
thought
it was like going to the DMV. Like,
no, it's not.
They check the numbers and they go, okay, yeah, you're good, whatever.
You pay money up front for an appointment time.
Yeah.
And if you're not there at your appointment time, you lost that money.
Yep.
Good luck. Try again.
Yeah.
And every time I've ever called for one, I'm like, okay, the bike's done. The bike's ready to go. I got a guy who wants to buy it. This is going to all work out great. Sure. I understand now it's April 13th. Okay. When's my next appointment I can come in? November. Hmm. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Or if you go in and they fail you, okay, I just got to fix these two things. Right. Hmm. When's my next appointment? December.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the state, man.
Some guy next to me, and it's weird because they have like curtains.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
to go to the next booth.
Oh, no. It is very like they don't want you knowing what's going on in there.
But yeah. some guy next to me went off on the guy. He's like, I've been here three fucking times. He goes, blah, blah, blah. Everything is the way it's supposed to be. And the guy's like, it wasn't because I can't. They're screaming at each other. People are getting all intense.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the guy's got a badge and a gun for one reason.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so when you say no louder than a certain level, he has the power to arrest you.
It seems like if you're a state highway patrol guy,
right,
and like you got fired or something happened,
yeah.
I think you get put into that department.
No, I'm pretty sure if you're the state highway patrol guy and a car lightly bumped your knee while you're doing a DUI stop,
oh, you go here,
then you go there.
Oh, okay.
Right, because you're still all the stuff.
Right? They love they
but you're injured on duty, but you're not collecting disability yet.
Yeah.
Yep. So they pull you off the street.
But they have a statey vibe to them.
Oh, don't they now?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Anybody else got any fun stuff? Fun stuff? The fun stuff that's coming up is the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. We've got Sean did a great job putting a map together. So I will now divulge a little bit about the ride.
Okay.
It is being done in a, we're not going to say the words. It's not a race. We would never do that. It's not a race. But portions of it may be time controlled. Right. That's just
maybe.
Just letting you know. Right. We decided that the old British idea of the tavern to tavern, the tourist trophy, the TT, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. We thought that'd be fun. And in the spirit of, you know, old-timey looking people and dapper looking people on dapper looking motorcycles. Well, that seemed like it was only fitting. So we're going to go from Cuyahoga County into Lorain County, very much in a group and a gaggle fuck like we normally do. And then once we get out there, it kind of turns into a little bit of a choose your own adventure thing. And there may be prizes, right? And we're not telling you got to go fast. We're going to tell you where to go. How you get there, that's up to you. And then we're going to tell you once you go to that spot, there's another spot you have to go to. And if you go to that spot, well, there might be prizes. So it's kind of fun. But there's going to be groups. Some might even say classes. Others people might just say they're just loosely organized departure times to minimize the kludge fuckery of being a bunch of guys out of the road at the same time.
We'll call that classless.
Thank you. It's a classless society. It's more social.
Classless group, I would say.
Castless group. Well, I would say that's a good idea.
I mean, you do have to tell
of
the people.
Of similar-ish vehicles.
Yeah. All the hours of math to figure out
the
most convenient and time-consuming or untime-consuming way to get everybody situated. It wasn't just thrown together.
We want to make sure that the people are where we want them when we want them there.
Yeah, right.
And that means that some people would go at a different time than other people would.
You want to make it convenient.
That's exactly right. We're not requiring anybody to have stopwatches or roll charts or anything like that. You just choose your own adventure. It's going to be fun. And we found some of our sponsors that we've leaned on in the past, and we leaned on them again, and they were kind of okay with that. It's pretty cool. So it's nice that people are ponying up a little bit. That's nice. Yeah, yeah. So nobody should, you know, nobody wants to go to an event and see some fun stuff happen and be like, oh, great, here's your paper hat, you know, cool, participation trophy, fine. It's great. Chris, you got something for us?
Yeah, you know, a farmer is concerned all three of his daughters are going on a date tonight. He decides he'll greet each man who shows up tonight with a shotgun in his hand. First man shows up, rings the doorbell, says to the farmer, hi, my name is Joe. I'm here for Flo. We're going to the show. Is she ready to go? Farmer likes this fella, sends Flo and Joe off on their own. Second man shows up. Hello, I'm Eddie. I'm looking for Betty. We're going to eat spaghetti. Is she ready? The farmer decides this guy's okay too, and off they go. Third man rings the doorbell and says, hey, my name is Chuck, and the farmer shoots him.
Yeah, seems about right. Seems about right. That's pretty good.
Hey, Smith, I heard you went to your lawyer, and Smith says, hey, how's it going? He's like, great, I got good news and bad news. What do you want to hear first? He's like, well, give me the good news. He's like, your wife, she found two pictures, and they might be worth millions. He's like, well, that's great. He's like, what's the bad news? It's pictures of Smith and his secretary.
Hey, they might be worth millions.
All right.
All right. Anybody else? That's it, man. We're going to remind everybody to please ride fast and take chances. Place out here, John.
Bum 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 bum